Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
From the west coast of Europe, you're listening to The Talk Station, Radio Netherlands.
Media Network, the weekly communications review, hosted by Jonathan Marks.
Hello, welcome to half an hour of what's happening in the world of wireless. Last Saturday, the Dutch domestic broadcasting scene got quite a shock. The membership council of the Veronica Broadcasting Organisation voted that they should get together with another public broadcaster, the TROS, and talk to the Minister of Culture, Dan Koner, about turning the most popular Dutch public TV network into a purely commercial channel. Combining the two organisations would mean job losses, but Veronica's research says that the combined efforts would be commercially viable. Indeed, if they don't do it, there are plans by Luxembourg's RTL to start RTL5, another television channel alongside the already profitable RTL4. The problem seems to be that if such a plan goes ahead, there will not be enough commercial income in the Netherlands to sustain the public service broadcasters who are left behind. The question also seems to be whether the continuing huge losses in revenue by the public sector will affect Holland's external radio service. That's us. Well, I can assure you there'll be a lot of discussion over the next few weeks. In the meantime, let's take a call on Hilversum 724-222.
Good morning, Jonathan. It's Carl Kruger in Colchester, Essex, England. You've got Radio Budapest have changing their times on July the 1st. All transmissions to Europe and the Americas will be at 21 and 0200 hours UTC for 1 hour duration. The DX programmes are being cut back and will be included in the 1 hour broadcast. Frequencies in consideration are 11910, 9835 and 6110. They are not yet confirmed, as we will find out on July the 1st. So, if Radio Netherlands are thinking of cutting back on the Media Network show, well, they'll be hearing protests from me. That's all for now. Catch you later.
Well, no plans to cut back Media Network for the moment. In fact, we're using the 10th anniversary of the programme as the opportunity to work especially hard behind the scenes. We've been working late into the night, I assure you, to update a lot of background information pamphlets we produce and upgrade our receiver tests still further. Stay tuned for announcements coming up very shortly. To the Soviet Union now, and Julius Hermans is on the line from Vleuten here in Holland with an update to an item that Andy Sennett mentioned last week.
Jonathan, last night Zigitas Silonias, the DX editor of Radio Vilnius, reported in his program that Radio Centras, a commercial radio station in Lithuania, will have its first shortwave broadcast next Saturday. They will broadcast from 0600 to 0700 UTC via Radio Vilnius on 9710. That's 9710. The program will be in Esperanto and will include a DX program from the Lithuanian DX Club. They hope to reach Latin America, and they especially ask for reception reports from that area, although they expect QRM from your relay station on Bonaire. The address to write to is Box 1792, that's 1792, Vilnius in Lithuania. And listeners are required to include two international reply coupons, except for listeners in Latin America who don't have to include return postage. So that's Radio Centras, a commercial radio station in Lithuania, who will start regular broadcasting via Radio Vilnius shortwave facilities. The program will be every last Saturday of the month, and in future they hope to include other languages besides Esperanto as well.
Esperanto? I think they may have overestimated the audience potential there, but let's hope that I'm proved wrong.
If you like the show, tell a friend. If you don't, then tell us.
We've been doing a bit of research into the growing number of Radio Moscow employees who are leaving the state external service to start commercial stations of their own. Former members of the French service helped get one station going, others have now followed the lead. In a homebrew studio in a back room in the eastern part of Oslo is one of the more unlikely stations you'll come across. This is the home of Radio Rocks, a Soviet commercial radio station broadcasting by satellite into the Soviet Union, live from the Norwegian capital. Behind Radio Rocks is a Soviet commercial venture, the Rocks Group, who's put up $7 million to get the station on the air in Leningrad, or maybe that should be St. Petersburg. For an hour a day, it's even in English.
Queen with Another One Bites the Dust, couple of minutes after 4 on a Thursday. You're listening to the nation's first independent commercial radio station. Here's Eddie Money with I Wanna Go Back.
Sergei Arkhipov used to be with the Chinese service of Radio Moscow. He's since left.
You have to show everything to your editor. You have to discuss everything, you know. Just no freedom there. That's the reason we decided to organize our own independent and music station. Because I was a musician when I was younger. I was singing and playing bass guitar in different of amateur groups, you know. And I am fond of music.
The former chief of Radio Moscow's Scandinavian department, Oleg Valikovsky, was the driving force behind the scheme to broadcast to Moscow. To avoid Soviet bureaucracy and shortages, they simply moved west. Sergei Arkhipov again.
And they had the great number of friends in Norway. You know, the connections in Scandinavia. And that's why they decided to start our radio, Radio Rocks.
Radio Rocks. FM.
Radio Rocks has a helping hand from the Norwegian PTT, who've given them the use of a satellite subcarrier they don't need at present. And the studios are rented at what Radio Rocks people call ridiculously low prices from one of Oslo's oldest commercial community stations, Radio Oslo. At the other end of the satellite link is the 10-kilowatt FM transmitter in Leningrad, on the air for 17 hours a day. But how many people do they reach?
Nobody knows exactly, but I think 2 or 3 million, definitely.
But their scheme involves vast expansion over the next 18 months or so. Radio Rocks' first FM relay was actually put up in Vilnius, Lithuania. The Soviet military action there in January halted their commercial plans, and the transmitter was apparently hidden by Lithuanian friends to avoid it falling into Soviet hands.
We're planning to cover 20 major cities of the western part of the Soviet Union. Leningrad is just the beginning. July, we're preparing to be on air in Moscow. Then Kiev, Vilnius maybe again, if everything will be okay there. You know what I'm talking about. Well, Kiev, Vilnius, Moscow, Brest, it's the western city of the Soviet Union.
And Brest is near the Polish border. As well as news and commercials from American soft drink companies, the station also airs the American Top 40. So how did the ex-Radio Moscow employees manage it all? Ex-Radio Moscow North American service announcer and former Soviet diplomat Peter Efimov is the presenter of Radio Rocks' English show. It's aimed at the young Soviets who want to improve their language skills.
The people who got this idea about 2 years ago, they went to, well, the state banks, USSR banks, and eventually got a loan. But in order to get that, we had to have a guarantee from a suitable partner, a financially secure partner. And that's where InterRocks surfaces. It's a Russian association for building and commerce.
With headquarters in Moscow.
FM – это частота 102 МГц, в которой работает Радио Рокс. Телефоны московской редакции 297-83-81, 297-83-81, телефакс 227-23...
Russian language commercials are made in Moscow and airlifted to Norway. 75% of the news is facts from a news bureau in Moscow. The rest is picked up by the Oslo staff through reading Western magazines and newspapers. At present, Radio Rocks is the only station that owns its transmitters, All other stations in the Soviet Union hire airtime from the state broadcaster Gostela Radio. But Radio Rocks isn't the only station with designs on the lucrative Moscow market. Wyoming radio entrepreneur Ben Dowd has a video company in the United States which makes travel documentaries. When that took them to the USSR, Ben saw his chance to start a commercial station, both on FM and shortwave.
I was over there a couple of weeks ago when we finalized the agreement. Under the terms of our agreement, we'll have access to 3 hours a day from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. beginning July 1st. It's anticipated that by August 1st, the facilities will be completed for the FM, and we'll be able to go to a full 24-hour schedule approximately October 1st.
Then why the shortwave? I mean, is that simply sort of get you off the ground?
Well, we don't even know that we're going to utilize that time yet. And if we do utilize it, we probably won't begin utilizing it until just before, maybe a couple of weeks before the FM goes on.
But when you say shortwave, is that shortwave then beamed to Moscow in the same way? Is it sort of reusing the old jammer transmitters?
Yes.
And what's the sort of range you're talking about? I mean, is it one transmitter in downtown Moscow, or how does it work, a network?
The FM transmitter will be a 60,000-watt FM. The tower is a 150-meter tower located in central Moscow. Based on topography, we should have about an 80-kilometer radius around Moscow.
And what are you calling it?
Radio 7.
Is there a particular number for the 7? I mean, why 7?
It's the 7th frequency authorized for Moscow. Our discussions have also brought in Leningrad and Vladivostok, but our first goal is to get the station up and running in Moscow, and then we'll worry about the other cities.
Amazing stuff. Well, there are quite a few commercial operations planned to start shortly in the Soviet Union, using the shortwave transmitters formerly used for jamming purposes. Mind you, there may be other transmitters available too because of the cutbacks at Radio Moscow. We put a call through to BBC Monitoring in Caversham Park, Reading.
Richard Misham, WBI.
Hello, Richard. Well, Radio Netherlands here, bothering you again with a follow-up to what's happening at Radio Moscow. You said a few weeks back on this programme that cuts were coming on June the 1st. And now you've had a chance to do some extensive analysis. What do you conclude? Have there been further reductions?
Yes, there's been a further cutback in broadcasting by Radio Moscow. In fact, this is a process that's now been going on for almost 2 years now. And the results of our survey at the beginning of June show that they've actually dropped about 7 languages and reduced a further 10 in output. So there's been quite a cutback, and the overall cutback in the past 18 months, 2 years, now amounts to about 25%.
That is indeed quite major. What languages have disappeared?
The languages that we think have disappeared, because we're doing this through a monitoring survey, so we can't be totally sure, but the languages missing are Bambara, that's the language spoken in Mali in West Africa, Malagasy. There are 4 languages of the Indian subcontinent that have disappeared, and those are Malayalam, Marathi, Nepalese, and Telugu. And also, we can no longer find broadcasts in Tagalog, that's the language of the Philippines.
Media Network, minutes ahead when seconds count.
Talking of Asia, we now cross back to Victor Gunatilaka in Sri Lanka, who has an answer to a query from David Wilson, writing from Leicester in the United Kingdom. He remarks that while we reported on how a volcano had affected VOA's transmitter site in the Philippines, we've said nothing about the natural disaster which struck Bangladesh recently.
Well, Jonathan, Bangladesh, according to their announcements, they don't seem to be affected by the natural disaster. But actual on-the-air monitoring reveals that they have only one transmitter for their external service language blocks. They still announce 2 frequencies for any external service transmission. For instance, at 1230 UTC, with their South and Southeast Asia English transmission, they announce 15,200 and 17,750 kilohertz. But in real fact, we hear only the 15,200 transmission.
Is it exactly on 15,200 at 1230?
Well, not really. It's exactly measured on 15,208 kilohertz, and it has been exactly on that frequency for the last 3 weeks.
Amazing. Now, down to Ethiopia, because you have an update for us about the English broadcasts.
Well, yes, Jonathan, the English broadcast from the Voice of Ethiopia is from 1500 to 1600 UTC, and the two frequencies, 9560 kilohertz and 7165 kilohertz.
And which gives the best reception with you?
Well, we have very good reception on 9560 kilohertz.
So that's 9560 at 15 hours UTC. What about those clandestine broadcasts from the Sudanese People Liberation Army?
Well, yes, that's the interesting thing, Jonathan, because for a long time, most people believed that radio SPLA was being transmitted from Ethiopia. And this was proved when the Voice of Ethiopia disappeared from there. And when it came back on the air, on the 3rd of June, we find that the transmitter is continuously on from 12 hours to 18 hours with the external service, and there is no radio SPLA at all.
And since then, no traces at any other times of SPLA?
Oh, not at all. So radio SPLA has disappeared completely from the airwaves.
Well, thanks, Victor, for that update. Now we're off to the Americas, and maybe this is familiar.
Disfrute este fin de semana con los éxitos de Radio Impacto.
Sound of Radio Impacto, actually a voice from the past. I made that recording on the beach at Miami about 2 years ago. Jeff White's joining me now because, Jeff, I think that signal's coming back.
Well, sometime within the next few weeks, shortwave listeners might start hearing a signal once again from Costa Rica on 5030 and 6150 kilohertz. No, it won't be Radio Impacto returning to the air, but it will be Impacto's transmitters. Those units were purchased by Adventist World Radio Costa Rica, as station manager David Gregory explains.
Radio Impacto, after it was sold, after it completed its whatever it was doing here, I'm not exactly sure what it was doing here, except I do know that it was costing whoever was sponsoring it a lot of money, because it was costing at least $10,000 to $20,000 a month to operate the crazy thing.
You mean from electricity costs?
Yes, just in electricity. Our 150-kilowatt transmitter costs a little bit over $1,000 to operate, and that's a 50, and they had two 100s, so there, right there you have at least $4,000 to $5,000 worth of electricity, and they had some 20s and several other things, plus the hilltop sites where they had to pay electricity too, so I estimate their electrical bill was somewhere around $10,000.
According to Gregory, Impacto had two 20-kilowatt transmitters and two 100-kilowatt units, all built by the Costa Rican company Elcor. Religious station AWR, which already had a 40-kilowatt and a 5-kilowatt transmitter, bought the two 20s and one of the 100s.
Well, the 100s were made up of two 50s that were combined. So they had actually four 50-kilowatt transmitters, which they combined to make two 100-kilowatt transmitters. And one was stationed up near the Nicaraguan border, beamed into Nicaragua. One 100-kilowatt was up there in Las Cruces. And the other one was located on the property which we purchased down in Cahuita, beamed into Panama. What we purchased were three transmitters, actually, two 20s, and 100, which was split into two 50s. We figured it would be better to have more frequency coverage than just have one transmitter, so we split it into two 50s, because there's only 3 dB difference between 50 and 100.
When AWR bought Radio Impacto's transmitters, it also bought the transmitter site near a place called Cahuita and the rights to the same frequencies.
We suspect, just in equipment alone, that what we purchased was worth probably about $600,000, and we got it for considerably less. Who owned it is there's a pretty good guess. There's only one government in this area that would have any interest in overthrowing both the Sandinistas and the rulership of Manuel Noriega, both at the same time, and be willing to pay $10,000 or more dollars a month, and the station didn't have that many commercials on it.
When the transmitter site at Cahuita goes on the air, Gregory says AWR will be using two cubical quad antennas.
One is beamed south, and the other one is beamed to cover Central America. The 6150 is going to be aimed at South America, and the 5030 has a bidirectional antenna to go up and down the Americas during the night hours.
Eventually, says Gregory, there will be six transmitters and some additional antennas at Cahuita.
What we will be installing when we install a full complement of six transmitters down there, which will have 350s, 220s, and a 5, we'll be using the 5 as a backup only, most likely. But the other transmitters, the 350s and the 220s, will be connected to a matrix eventually that will be able to switch between antennas. We're installing three log periodics from TCI Corporation there in San Jose, California.
It's currently the rainy season in Costa Rica, so it may be 6 months before those antennas are actually installed. When they're up and running, it will allow AWR Costa Rica to expand the number of hours and languages in which it transmits. It hopes to eventually cover all of the Americas in at least 5 languages.
The 5 principal languages of the Americas are English, Spanish, Dutch, Portuguese, and French, not necessarily in that order. And those are the languages we're going to be putting on. When we get the 6150 on the air, we hope to add Portuguese at some time during the day, because the 6150 will get down into Brazil. So we've been working with our contacts in Brazil to develop programming for us.
All of the Spanish programming is produced at AWR's 5 studios in Costa Rica. The English programming comes mostly from the U.S., as does the French. The Dutch programs are produced in Holland, and AWR is planning to prepare the Portuguese programs in Brazil. Presently, the Costa Rican station is transmitting 4 hours per day in English and 6 in Spanish, daily except Saturday, and the schedule is expected to remain that way until the beginning of next year. The best heard frequency, at least until the new Impacto transmitters are inaugurated, is 9725 kilohertz.
Transmite Radio Mundial Adventista con un mensaje de paz y amor para América y el mundo.
AWR also has a station in Guam, which covers Asia, India, and the eastern part of the Soviet Union, a station in Italy, which covers Europe, the Middle East, and the western USSR, and it rents time on Africa No. 1 in Gabon to reach Africa, although it's looking for a site to perhaps put up its own station on that continent. A small station in Guatemala operates as sort of a satellite operation under the control of AWR Costa Rica. AWR Europe recently began transmitting in southern Italy on 2 medium-wave frequencies, 1512 kHz in Puglia and 1521 kHz in Sicily. Both transmitters are small, only 250 watts, but they're expecting to increase the power to 10 or 20 kilowatts if and when the Italian PTT grants them official licenses. The entire AWR network belongs to the Seventh-day Adventist Church, which was organized in 1863.
Thanks, Jeff, for that report. Now, my program recorded on a train a few weeks back set a challenge to a regular media network contributor to really take us for a ride. Here's his report.
This is Dave Rosenthal sailing along in my rental car in eastern Canada, heading for a place called Longford Mills, a small rural community about 140 kilometers north of Toronto. It's a beautiful morning. Trees are green, sky is clear, air is warm. So peaceful. I wonder if there's anything that could break this silence.
Oh, heavens, this is a room filled with radios. There must be 50 people here, all glued to their receivers. Antenna wire running everywhere. Let me turn some of these things off. Is this any way to spend a nice Canadian spring day? Almost. Whew, that's better. Now let's find out what's going on.
Actually, this time I flew the Media Network Learjet to eastern Canada to visit a very popular shortwave listening activity that recently took place. It's called a DX camp, and it was organized and run by one of the largest radio clubs in the world, the Ontario DX Association, better known as the ODXA. Twice a year, ODXA members get together in this rural setting, far away from city static and interference, to set up literally scores of receivers and miles of antennas. They then spend almost 3 days of virtually non-stop listening, socializing, and sharing of ideas. And for this camp, there were some added features, like talks on receiver modifications, solar activity and its effects on radio propagation, and even an antenna experiment or two. Steve Canny, organizer of all 10 DX camps, says the ability to get together with other DXers has a lot to do with it.
Well, the major issue for me has always been the social element. Shortwave listening is such a solitary kind of hobby that there's very few opportunities for people to get together and listen together. And about 5-6 years ago, we started up the DX camps here at the Ontario Student Leadership Center, which is about 120 kilometers north of Toronto. And we have a listening post which can accommodate at least 60 or 70 different stations in operation. Plus, we have fields behind us that we can put up long wire antennas, 1,000 footers, you name it, we can put them up. And that's the kind of antenna system that most people cannot do at home. So for them, it's a real treat to come up and run out 1,000 feet of wire or put up a special dipole or whatever they want to put up. We can do that here at this DX camp. It's a country atmosphere. We're right on a large lake, and it's just like a holiday for a lot of people.
Well, if you want to find out what makes an event like a DX camp tick, the best way to do it is to talk to the DXers themselves. Apparently, being able to meet and share the experience with other shortwave listeners is high on the list.
I've had a good time. I haven't had a lot of sleep, but I've enjoyed myself a lot. Saw what my Sony AN1 could do stuck up in the rafters here, and I saw what a 500-foot long wire could do. And that's about it. I've learned something about propagation, thanks to you, and something about receivers and other electronic things, thanks to John from Alabama. So it's been a productive weekend in terms of learning new information. Plus, I met someone here from Central America who's helped me with my Spanish. So it's been a really productive week and more in one way.
I think there's the socializing and the interaction of ideas, because most of us listen at home on our own. And we get into set routines, set patterns. We listen to the same stations all the time. We don't dig out. And when you come up here, you realize how much other people are getting, and so you start trying for yourself. And I've borrowed a preselector for my Sony 2010 from John from Alabama, and I've discovered that I can pick up signals with it that I simply couldn't get without it.
Well, you can get a lot of information from other people. You have a person over here who's good at something, and you have a person over here that knows a lot about tropical bands. And so if you're looking for any sort of particular information on the shortwave hobby, be it propagation or tropical band or receiver modifications, you can find just about on this weekend anyway about just about anybody you want on any sort of speciality. We got FM people here, some guy just over in the back with a big FM antenna just inside the building here. And he swirls that around looking for all the FM DX he can find. And we've got medium wave DXers as well. So I think we're covering pretty well all the bands.
Well, the grand total of countries monitored for this DX camp was 130, with hardcore DXers listening right down to the wire. This was still short of the ODXA's DX camp all-time record of 186 countries. But I don't think anyone really minded that much. Regardless, DX camps have been among the best activities the ODXA has come up with. As a first-time DX camper, I was struck by the diversity of the participants. So now it's all over, and I'm back home with the Media Network Learjet safely stored in its hangar. Now it's up to other DX clubs to plan their own DX camps. If your DX club plans one, please let me know, and perhaps I'll be able to fly the Media Network Learjet to your part of the world, too. I wonder if Tahiti has a DX club.
Well, if it does, Dave, I'm going myself. I'm going to jump in the car now and head off for southern Germany. There's a giant amateur radio exhibition at Friedrichshafen this weekend. If you're going too, then note that Radio Austria International is holding a get-together at 11 o'clock local time on Saturday morning at the ADDX stand. I'll be at that gathering too. Just look out for a guy with a tape recorder and peculiar German. Once again, that's the ADDX stand at the Friedrichshafen Ham Radio meeting this coming Saturday at 11 a.m. If you can't make it, don't worry. I hope to have a report in 7 days. Whatever you're doing, have a pleasant weekend.